families in poverty a way to move out of it. One way they do so is by giving families animals that can provide them with both food and reliable income. With your donation today, we will ask our children in our religious education program to decide what type of animals will be given to families to help lift them out of their poverty. If you did the Living Below the Line challenge, we encourage you to donate what you would have spent on groceries to the Heifer Project today. If you didn't take part in that challenge, please still make a difference with your donation. If you are making out a check, you can just put Heifer International in the memo line, and that will go toward that effort. Okay. Also, the bidding has begun. Our church's biggest fundraiser is underway with many wonderful donations of time, talent, and treasures. Please be sure to take a look. There's something for everyone. We will hold another raffle today as well. This one features one of Paula Hillman's amazing homemade pies, Jim Hansen's incredible home-roasted coffee beans, and Chris Rollins' yummy homemade scones. Tickets are $3, 2 for 5, or 5 for 10. You can even start a tab for the auction. Wow, that sounds dangerous. Next Sunday will be the final day of our auction. Feel free to bid during the week if you're here at church. Thanks to everyone who has donated this year. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming church activities. We hope you'll join in. To stay current on services, events, and activities, check our webpage at lcuuc.org and like and follow us on Facebook. Please take a moment now to silence all electronics you have with you here today. Thank you.
From the busyness of every day, we gather once a week to remember who we are and to dream of who we might become. And we travel this road together. As companions on this journey, we share the milestones we meet along the way. Those individual moments of joy and sorrow become our shared moments of comfort and celebration because we travel this road together. We share this journey across differences of belief and opinion because we value diversity and because we care for one another, because we traveled this road together. Today, as we take the next steps, let us notice our fellow travelers, the burdens that they carry, the songs that inspire their hearts. Let us open the holy havens of our hearts. Let us share the sacred places of our souls, for we are pilgrims who share a common path, and we traveled this road together. So come and let us worship. Please take just a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to your neighbor.
We light this chalice and we remember. We cast not our eyes below. We say to ourselves, we are how we came, wounded from struggles, triumphant in our survival, entitled by birthright to belong to this, the only humankind there is, saying, I am included, I belong, and I am here. I will be and do. I will breathe joy into desolation. I will breathe peace into conflict. I will breathe life into destruction. I will be the earth I wish to see. I am growth and hope and glee. Please rise in body and spirit and join in singing our opening hymn, number 160, Far Too Long by Fear Divided. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we work to bring a message of hope and grace to an imperfect world. My name is Christy Bowden, and I'm happy to be the worship associate for this morning's service. No matter who you are or where you come from, you are welcome here. Whether you work on Wall Street and have a $1 million retirement portfolio, or at Walmart and you can't seem to save enough to make it through the month, You are welcome. We welcome you who have known nothing but acceptance in your life, and you who have known the pain of exclusion. LCUUC is a UUA-recognized welcoming congregation, which means we affirm each of you and all people, queer, trans, straight, married, divorced, young, and old. Again, welcome. We are so pleased that you have chosen to worship with us today.
One of the ways that we try to support our local community is by giving to our local food pantries, both financially and by collecting non-perishables. So if you have brought non-perishable food items to donate, please bring them forward or ask a child to bring them forward. And I invite the children to stay up front and enjoy a story. And this morning's story is going to be told by our music staff, Doug Estee and Nancy Broad.
Hi there. Long, long time ago, in a place a whole lot warmer than here, a group of people called the Hebrews left a country called Egypt and started to look for a place where they could live safely. When they left Egypt, they took all of their sheep and their goats. They took their clothing and any food that they could grab as they ran away. But that was all they had. You see, in Egypt, they'd been slaves. And they didn't want to hang around in case the leader decided to make them slaves again.
So they took their things and they headed out. They walked over deserts and up and down mountains. Sometimes they stopped for a little while, or even for almost a year. They met new people. They would plant food and raise crops. But when their crops were ready, they would harvest them. And they would pick up all the fruits and vegetables. And then they would pack all of their things and move on again. The Hebrews were looking for a place where they could practice their religion and worship their God in peace, and they just couldn't find a place like that, not for years and years. Sometimes the people they met wanted them to worship their gods instead, and sometimes the people they met wouldn't even talk to them. They just chased them away.
For 40 years, the Hebrews walked and looked, and while they were walking and looking, where do you think they slept? Any ideas? They didn't have the time or money to build nice houses over and over again. So they slept in tents and little huts that they had made from the stems of the plants and any wood that they could find. At harvest time, they would decorate their huts with plants and invite all of their friends and family in to share the food with them, to remind themselves that even though their homes were temporary, you know what temporary means? They weren't going to last very long because they weren't going to be there very long. That even though their homes were temporary, they were still home as long as they had each other.
Today, around this time each year, Jewish families still build little huts called sukkah out in their yards. And they decorate them with plants and rugs and pretty things, and then they sleep in them for a few days. They invite friends to come over and eat with them, and they celebrate together because they know that no matter how bad things get, the important thing is to be there for one another and to help one another through the good times and when the things aren't so great. Today we're going to learn a song that goes with this time of year to help remind us that the important part of being together and celebrating when we can.
Now, a lady named Judy Kaplan Ginsburg wrote a song called My Little Sukkah. And the nice thing about this song is I don't need to hand out words or teach you the words ahead of time because it's kind of an echo song. I sing a line and then you echo it back. Okay, so it's fun to do and it's really easy. So you'll sing. I build a little sukkah.
I built a little sukkah.
Out in the back.
Out in the back.
It looks like a house.
It looks like a house.
And a little like a shack.
And a little like a shack.
Well, it's not too big.
It's not too big.
And it's not too high.
And it's not too high.
When you sit inside.
When you sit inside.
You can see the sky.
You can see the sky.
Okay, now shake the luvah. Smell the air truck so sweet. Come and have a look in my sukkah and help yourself to something to eat. In my sukkah, in my sukkah, in my sukkah. I built the roof.
I built the roof
of sticks and twigs.
Of sticks and twigs.
I strung up apples.
I strung up apples.
And nuts and figs.
And nuts and figs.
And some bananas.
And some bananas.
And that's not all.
And that's not all.
There were fruits and veggies.
Fruits and veggies.
All over the walls.
All over the walls.
With the shake my luvah, smell the air truck so sweet. Come and have a look in my sukkah and help yourself to something to eat. In my sukkah, in my sukkah, in my sukkah. I built my sukkah.
I built my sukkah.
Of cloth and wood.
Of cloth and wood.
It looks so pretty.
It looks so pretty.
And it smells so good.
And it smells so good.
The leaves and branches.
Leaves and branches.
Oh, all around.
All around.
My mama lights the candles.
My mama lights the candles.
When the sun goes down.
When the sun goes down.
Shake the luvah. Smell the air truck so sweet. Come and have a look in my sukkah and help yourself to something to eat. In my sukkah, in my sukkah, in my sukkah.
May the light and love of our chalice lead you today and every day. And if all of you would follow our lantern bearer to your classes, and if the rest of you would help me sing the children out. The song is called For You Shall Go Out, and the words are written in your order of service. At a stewardship meeting, a UU congregation's wealthiest member decided to share a portion of his faith journey. I'm a millionaire, he said, and I attribute it all to the rich blessings of this church in my life. I can still remember the turning point of my faith like it was yesterday. I had just earned my very first dollar, and I went to an RE meeting that night. The speaker was a social justice activist who told about his work. I knew that I only had a $1 bill, and I had to either give it all or forget about it because part of it wouldn't be enough. So at that moment, I gave my whole dollar, my first dollar, my whole dollar, to do good work. And I believe that the universe has blessed that decision, and that is why I am a rich man today. When he finished and sat down, the chair of the stewardship committee thought about it for a minute and then leaned over and said, "What a wonderful story. I'll tell you what, I dare you to do it again." And today I dare you. This morning's offering will now be given and received, and please remember that the designated collection is going to go to Heifer International. This is such a valuable cause. Loose bills and coins and any check with Heifer International or Heifer Project on the memo line will go there, so please give generously. Thank you so much for these gifts given and received for the life and the work of this community. What you give is so important. One of the reasons that we come together on Sundays in Beloved Community is to share both our laughter and our tears, and we do this in several ways. Before the service, you're always welcome to come up and silently light a candle up here at the candle table. And during the service, we speak aloud, and the worship associate lights candles for us. So if anyone has a joy or a concern that you want to share, please raise your hand. One of the ushers will bring you a microphone.
Hi, please light a candle in memory of my Aunt Joni, who passed away this week from cancer, and also for another family member, Linda, who is battling lung cancer at too young an age. So prayers for her appreciated. Thank you.
Oh, this is Tom. Last week I mentioned that everyone in my wife Lori's congregation evacuated their area due to a hurricane. And they've all returned over the past week, and Lori has returned as well. Our house had no significant problem down there. Tree from the neighbor fell into the yard, you know, big deal. That's happened all over the place. But the roots of that tree pulled up the neighbor's sewer line, so that's kind of a problem. And someone in the congregation had a tree fall through their roof. But as far as I know, everyone is insured, so this is a could have been worse situation. And then my second candle has to do with my young adult child, Rosa, also known as Nuka, who, if you didn't know, had traveled to San Francisco about 4 weeks ago in order to start a AmeriCorps rotation at Habitat for Humanity there. But they found that there's no place to live there that's affordable on a AmeriCorps stipend, and so are returning here to figure out what's the next step.
Hi, my name is Paula. Please light a candle of concern for my office colleague who started chemotherapy this week for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Hi, I'm the daughter of Christy up there, and I am excited to announce that my third trimester is starting on the 19th, so it's been a wonderful pregnancy so far, and I'm just hoping that I can follow through healthy and happy until January, so...
Good morning, this is Susan. Would you please light a candle in memory of my mom who passed away this week?
And we light our last candle today for all of those joys and all of those sorrows that we hold deeply in our hearts but that we have not been able to speak aloud today.
Our first reading today is from the work of Catholic liberation theologian Dom Helder Camara. Dom Helder Camara was one of the great prophets of the Catholic Church in the last 80 years. As Archbishop of Recife, Brazil, he gained an international reputation as a champion of human rights and as a dedicated warrior for the poor. In his book, Essential Writings, he says, "Charity is not enough. I have not come to help anyone to delude themselves by thinking that all we need is a little generosity and social work. Of course, there are cases of shocking poverty to which we have no right to remain indifferent. Very often, we have to give immediate assistance. But don't let us think that the problem is limited to a few minor reforms. And let us not confuse the beautiful and essential idea of order, the goal of all human progress, with impoverished versions of it that are responsible for keeping in place structures that we all recognize cannot be retained. If we want to get to the roots of our social problems, we will have to help the country to break the vicious circle of underdevelopment and destitution. Some people are scandalized when they are told that this is our number one social problem. Some people think of demagogy when we talk about people living in subhuman situations. But development cannot be implemented top-down. It can't be imposed. Let us not be afraid of correct ideas, even if they are often misused. Development implies an awakening of the minds, an awakening of public feeling, an awakening of culture, self-advancement, technical planning. The church does not stay at the edge of history. It lives at the heart of history through its free, adult, and responsible laity. Here ends the first reading.
Please join me in a silent moment of meditation or the spirit of prayer.
This is an excerpt from a blog by Linda Tirado. Linda is a poverty activist and a night cook at a diner. The link to her entire blog is in your order of service. Please consider reading it. Linda says, I make a lot of poor financial decisions. None of them matter in the long term. I will never not be poor. So what does it matter if I don't pay a thing and a half this week instead of just one thing? It's not like the sacrifice will result in improved circumstances. The thing holding me back isn't that I blow $5 at Wendy's. It's that now that I have proven that I am poor, that is all that I am or ever will be. It is not worth it to me to live a bleak life devoid of small pleasures so that one day I can make a single large purchase. I will never have large pleasures to hold on to. There's a certain pull to live what bits of life you can while there's money in your pocket, because no matter how responsible you are, you will be broke in 3 days anyway. When you never have enough money, it ceases to have meaning. I imagine having a lot of it is much of the same thing. Poverty is bleak. It cuts off your long-term brain. It's why you see people with four different baby daddies instead of one. You grab a bit of connection wherever you can to survive. You have no idea how strong the pull to feel worthwhile is. It's more basic than food. You go to these people who make you feel lovely for an hour that one time, and that's all you get. You're probably not compatible with them for anything long term, but right in this minute, they can make you feel so powerful and valuable. It does not matter what will happen in a month. Whatever happens in a month is probably going to be just about as indifferent as whatever happened today or last week. None of it matters. We don't plan long term because if we do, we'll just get our hearts broken. It's best not to hope. You just take what you can get as you spot it. I'm not asking for sympathy. I'm just trying to explain on a human level how it is that people make what looks from the outside like awful decisions. This is what our lives are like. And here are our defense mechanisms. And here is why we think differently. It's certainly self-defeating, but it's safer. That's all. I hope it helps make sense of it. Here ends the second reading. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing number 354. We laugh, we cry.
We need to feel there's something here to which
In 1985, I visited Estill County, Kentucky for the first time. It's what most of you would have heard referred to as Appalachia. And it's pretty much textbook Appalachia. It's the images you've seen in movies. At the time, I remember thinking, I wonder if I'm going to start hearing banjos. It's pretty textbook. And I went as part of a service project for the Appalachian People's Service Organization to help dig water and septic systems. We were a few mountains over from the Red River Gorge. And it was an amazing trip, mostly because of the people. The first local teenager who rushed out to greet everyone, he was so excited to meet a new group of teenagers. And he brought us all ice-cold well water, shook hands. He was so happy and so excited to show us around. And his name was Manfred. Eventually, we got to see where he lived. He had a wood stove for heating and cooking, and a cistern that collected water. They did have an indoor bathroom, we asked, a bunch of city kids. They had electricity, and you knew this because they had a massive satellite dish out in the yard. But the roof was a combination of shingles and tar paper and tin and tarps. Manfred showed us his room and his personal books. He had four or five that he had bought at a school book fair, and he kept them in a plastic freezer bag. And they were tucked in the eaves in the attic room where he lived so that they wouldn't get wet. He took really good care of his stuff. We were typical 80s kids, so of course we're talking, and we found out very quickly Manfred had never seen or heard of a mall. No clue what a mall would be. He'd heard of both elevators and escalators, but he couldn't imagine riding on one or what that would be like. He'd left school the year before at 16 to get a roofing job with his dad, and he told us, very excited, together they made about $450 a month after taxes. They were able to work April through October, and so they made about $3,150 a year. And I looked the other day when I was working on this. That would have been about halfway to the poverty line at the time. And they considered themselves incredibly lucky. They had an amazing community. They had an old truck that his grandfather had left him that worked incredibly well. His dad was able to fix it when it broke. They owned their house and land that had been passed down to them. They knew how to cook and hunt. They had friends that would trade them fruit for some of the vegetables they grew. They had a beautiful quilt on the wall that Manfred's great-grandmother had made. Made the whole house look gorgeous. And his girlfriend would bring over flowers and little stuff that she found to make their table look nice. They had one another. They had their community. And they were doing pretty okay. They were proud of themselves. When you looked at them, you didn't see poor. You saw just some pretty incredible people. I thought of Manfred this week as many of us tried living below the line and eating for $150 per person per day for 5 days, and I thought about how much has changed and how much is different between rural Appalachia in 1985 and poverty today. Poverty today for a family of four is about $24,000. That's the poverty line. For a family of two, it would be almost $16,000. When the mortgage bubble burst, it meant that a lot of poor families lost their homes, their land. They moved to apartments or subsidized housing. They sure don't have wood-burning fireplaces. They pay for city water and sewage instead of cisterns. And in places like Flint, that water is darn near undrinkable. Many of them have no idea how to grow vegetables, and competition and automation have made semi-skilled laboring jobs really hard to find. We have folks with college degrees fighting for jobs at McDonald's. 15% of American households, 45 million people, live below the poverty line. Now, for those of you who tried out just the meal idea, just eating on that incredibly limiting budget, was it hard? I'm sure some of you thought about trying it and found out there was just no way you could make it work, right? Children had sporting events. They needed more food than $1.50 a day worth. They needed their hot lunch. They needed a good breakfast. Maybe you had meetings at work that meant you had to buy lunch or coffee. For those who did do it, I'm guessing that most of us were able to drive to the store in our own car, and we were able to find what we wanted at the first store we came to. And we could go home and cook it in pots and pans that we owned with skills that we learned way before last week. But it gave us a taste of how hard it could be. And even for those of us who didn't try it, it makes an impact. I'm sure some people thought about it and then said quite realistically, I just can't do it. I just can't do it. There is no way I'm going to have rice and beans for 5 days. There's no way I'm going to try to find all these recipes. The amount of effort it would take, the amount of planning to live on $1.50 a day would mean I wouldn't have a life. Forget this. But for the people who live this way all the time, they don't have the ability to just walk away. And so it's up to us. According to the World Bank, on a global scale, you're in extreme poverty if you meet these criteria. And these used to be things we considered internationally. That we here in America would say, well, of course, nobody meets those criteria here, except maybe in Appalachia. But listen to these criteria. You're short of food for all or part of the year. Often you eat only one meal a day. Sometimes you have to choose between feeding your child and feeding yourself. Sometimes you can't do either. You can't save money. If a family member gets ill and you need money to see a doctor, or you lose your job, you have to borrow from a local moneylender. Here in America, it would be a short-term payday lending operation. And they will charge you so much interest, you will never be free of that debt. It will continue to keep turning over because you have to pay them back and then you have to take out another loan again immediately. You cannot afford to send your children to school, or if you do send them to school, you may have to take them out again because you can't afford school supplies. You live in an unstable house made with things you need to rebuild every 2 or 3 years. We don't have mud houses here in general. But we do have homeless people, or we have people where their roof is repaired with a tarp and a sheet of tin and some cardboard. You have no source of safe drinking water. Up until 5 years ago, I would have said, there is no way I would be able to say yes to this in the United States. Now I have entire cities where the answer is, we have no source of safe drinking water. These characteristics used to describe sub-Saharan Africa. Today, parts of America. But the difference between Manfred and his dad, proud and happy, feeling like they had absolutely enough to get through life, and a family currently living in inner city Chicago or Milwaukee, that difference is us. That difference is community. For Appalachian families 30 years ago, community was what elevated you from desperately poor to doing just fine. Community supported you and helped you through. But families today often lack that support system, and they have no way of creating it. It's up to us. It's up to people who believe that everyone should have a voice, that everyone is entitled to worth and dignity. But we have to be willing to step forward and to live into the values that we claim. A few years ago, writer and researcher Peter Singer wrote an excellent book called The Life You Can Save. And it explores extreme poverty around the world. And it puts forth a heck of a case for assessing your life and determining what it is you really need and what is excessive. And it looks at how we find ways to combat poverty on a global scale. Now, when it was written, he didn't find that most Americans were living in extreme poverty, but over the last 6 years, we have tipped that way in some areas. Singer takes the time to explain poverty, to look at how it happens, how it keeps happening, and what will destroy it. He scientifically breaks down the arguments against destroying it. So he looks at what the opposition will say, why people will say, no, don't do that. And he forces you to look hard at the moral and ethical implications of inequality. Do yourself a favor, get the book. It's on Amazon. There are used copies for a penny. It's worth a read. Now, he has some proposals that most people will not accept and would never accept, and I would be one of them. I am not going to sell all my possessions, give them to the poor, and go to work in the inner city. I have a different calling. You are probably not going to sell all your possessions and go to work in the inner city. And that's okay. But he puts forth one suggestion that I can't ignore. He uses this incredible example. He said, you're dressed up in your best clothing, absolute best clothing. You're on your way to somewhere important, maybe a wedding reception, maybe a recital. And on the way, you look out the window of your car that you're driving, and you see a toddler in a pond. And they are drowning. The pond is muddy. The banks are filthy with mud. There's no one else paying any attention, but this child is drowning, and you're 10 feet away. Without you, without a doubt, the toddler will drown in the muddy water. They cannot get their head out. You can save them without risk to your own life. No risk whatsoever. The water's only going to come up to your waist. But your lovely clothes and your dress shoes are going to get ruined. Your car is going to get splashed with muck. But both of you are going to be alive. Singer says that if you agree you should ruin your shirt and your pants and maybe even your car seat to save that toddler, then you should recognize that you have an ethical responsibility to ruin that shirt, to give away the excess, to save the life of those drowning without you, because we are the community. We're the people that make a difference. We've already got the power and the ability to do this. Tonight begins the Jewish festival of Sukkot, the Feast of Tabernacles. And as you heard from the children's story, it's a feast commemorating all the wandering the Jews did and all the little huts they built to house themselves and the fact that through it all they remained a community. They were willing to share what they had gathered with one another, even if it was just a bunch of sticks making a roof that you could see the sky through. Buddhism says to release your attachment to things, and that the desire to have doesn't gain you wisdom. Christianity is pretty darn blunt. The book of Luke, Jesus says, look, sell everything you have, give it to the poor. Period. There's no codicils on that. Sell it all, give it away, and then follow me. You can't search for the truth while you're weighed down with your stuff. It isn't about how much you have, what you spend on clothing, or a new bike, or a summer home. It doesn't make me any smarter or wiser to have spent $60 on this, $200 on the robes. I am just as smart wearing this. Probably a little more appropriate for this audience. Some people will hear me better in a t-shirt and in gym shoes. So take some time over the rest of this year and think about what it means to be the beloved community of those surviving below the line. Because you're called to act. You can see the toddler drowning in the pool. I would ask you to do this. Read the book, The Life You Can Save by Peter Singer, or at least check it out online. The Life You Can Save, Peter Singer. Educate yourself on how poverty happens. Because as you heard in the reading today, it's very easy to assume it's because people make bad choices. If you didn't try to live below the line this week, try it at least once this year, even if only for one day. Give yourself a crash course in what poverty looks and feels like. Even if it's only one day where you have to say to yourself, no, I can't have that. No, I can't do that. Join the fight to increase the minimum wage to an actual living wage. It's your decision how you do this. I would suggest fight for 15, but there are other groups and other organizations. Educate yourself on what it takes to actually live in our country. Join our Social Justice Committee in exploring income inequality this year. That's your easiest option. Just stop by. Talk to Carrie Duma, talk to Phil Smith. Find out. Commit to donating financially to fight poverty. I personally belong to a plainclothes movement, and every year I donate the money that I would have spent on new or expensive clothing to buy clothing for the homeless. Pick your own style of giving, but give. Commit to financially supporting this church so that we can, in turn, continue to educate and to fight poverty as a group. It's easier to do things together. These are not little challenges. But our faith, our belief in what humanity can be, calls us to deeds and not creeds. So challenge yourself. Choose what sacrifices you will make in order to live James Luther Adams' examined life. How will you help those surviving below the line? How will you help to make their numbers smaller and their burdens lighter? You see the toddler drowning in the pool. We're all blessed in different ways, whether we are the cheesemakers or the beer brewers, the dreamers of dreams or the writers of books. It's time to share your blessings. So how will you share this year? Amen. We have just a few moments for a polylogue today. So if you have any thoughts that you would like to share, please raise your hand and an usher will bring you a microphone.
Hi, this is Scott. I had a real eye-opening experience when I was living in Las Vegas some years ago in the 1990s. Some friends and I went down into Mexico. So we're on the American side. We go through a gate in our vehicle. And as soon as we crossed, within feet, you went from beautifully manicured lawns and nice curbs and streets with no potholes to what looked like a bombed-out war zone in Mexico in an eye blink. So that was amazing to see a difference that shocking in that short of a distance. But what really opened my eyes was we went further out of town. Yeah. This is where the canals were. This is where the corrugated tin shacks were. And I'm like, whoa, as I'm looking at it and looking at things, they're really kind of scoping it out. But you know what really struck me? The kids were happy. That made me think of your story about Appalachia. Yeah. The kids looked happy. And I worked at a school with a bunch of surly, disaffected, pretty well-to-do kids for the most part. I mean, insofar as, you know, having a comfortable life. I was like, wow, that is amazing. And I had to study that for quite a while. And what you said about their community, they felt like they were okay. I'm sure these kids were surrounded by people that made them feel like they're okay. They didn't want a whole lot more.
Hey, going back to the Heifer International thing, you can buy gifts for people as, well, you buy them a gift, and the gift to them is you're donating an animal to a person in a third world country. And one year, this one family, they got me a goat, which was an upgrade from the year before, and I got really excited about that. And then this last year, it was a llama, and I was just like, oh, my God, a whole llama. That is huge. So, I mean, when you give this kind of gift, people get pretty excited about it. So I really strongly recommend for Christmas gifts buying something from Heifer International and giving someone a card, because I just got chills because it just made me so happy. So just thought I'd throw that in there.
Jim.
I would like to add to what Angel just said. A couple of years ago, I decided to, that was the main thing I did in gifts, but I picked something that was appropriate for each, like the grandchildren, you know, the one that had eye problems, I gave them something to give. I could donate it to Siva, who works with eyes. That's Ram Dass's organization. I gave to Heifer for the ones that were into bunnies and rabbits. And for the parents or as the family as a whole, I gave a bigger animal, you know. And they kind of looked funny because they all got smaller presents. Something little, but I think when they started to think about it, and like we gave some to some Native Americans for the person that has diabetes in the family because they have so much diabetes, you know, I think they started to think.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Thank you all.
We extinguish our chalice, but we remember the call to cherish life's blessings and to share them gladly with one another. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn this week, number 113, Where is Our Holy Church? Service has ended and your service has begun. Peace, and may it be so.